Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the ACI Airports Council International Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Nancy Gauthier. Please go ahead, Ms. Gauthier.
Hello, and welcome, and thank you for dialing in and joining us. We're glad that you can be here without being here, but we're sorry you're not here because the weather has been fine this week, and there's a great crowd of airport delegates, world business partners. We've had a very good turnout for the meeting. What we'd like to do today is give you the opportunity to ask a few questions on any topic you wish, but we will lead with a little bit of an introduction. I have with me here the ACI chair, Mr. Max Moore-Wilton, who is from Sydney as well, but he is the chair of our World Governing Board and a very active supporter of everything that we do. Angela Gittens, who is the Director General of ACI World, is also right here beside me. And then we have some of our staff experts who will be joining us in case you have some questions that go a little bit more in depth. Sitting in this room also, we have two reporters who were here at the conference, David Grossman from Air Transport News and Joe Bates, who is the editor of Airport World magazine. So you will also hear them asking some questions as we go along. And we have with us also Stephanie Allard, who represents Montreal International. As you may have seen, one of our main announcements yesterday was a move to Montreal, relocating our headquarters for ACI World to Montreal. So I will, without further introduction, I will let Max say just a few words about some of the perspectives that we examined yesterday.
Thank you very much. Well, this conference is the annual conference, and we have about 500 delegates from 71 countries here. So we've got a very good basis for exchange of ideas and networking. But it's also the 20th anniversary of the foundation of ACI. And as Nancy mentioned, we've taken this opportunity at the 20th anniversary to refocus the organization and have us ready to participate actively as on the global stage in charting a new course for aviation and for airports. And a part of that was the decision that was passed unanimously by our World Assembly yesterday to move our world headquarters to Montreal, which is the center of aviation policy and regulation development in the world, the headquarters of ICAO, and also a substantive representative office of IATA. So we believe that that will provide us with a very sound base for going forward into the future. The theme of our conference of charting a new course on airports on the global stage really represents our recognition that we need to have policies which will take into account the substantial innovation which is taking place in the aviation industry, but also recognizing the need for continuity of purpose, harmonization of policies, and integration between the major players of governments, airlines, airports, suppliers, and the traveling public for us to work together. So this particular conference I found very instructive and also very important in terms of us being able to go together in terms of charting a new course for the industry.
Thank you, Max. Very good introduction. I think Angela now, as most of you know, she had a speech, a review of what we're doing and where we're going with the members at the Assembly yesterday. And I think she could point out a few of the highlights in there and some of the challenges that we have facing us and what we're going to be doing about it.
So what we have facing us in kind of the immediate term, of course, are the issues of security, particularly with the recent acts of terrorism. And we have highlighted the need, one, for airports certainly to support both the actions and focus of government and the other industry stakeholders with respect to securing the supply chain as well as protecting passengers. And we want that done in a sustainable way. We realize that at times immediate actions need to be taken to thwart a specific real or credible threat. But for this industry to continue to be sustained, for us to continue to thwart the the continued evolution of the threat, that there needs to be a global approach, there needs to be a risk-based approach that governments and industry can work together on continually, so that we don't continue to have patchworks that then wind up exposing us to new vulnerabilities. A second issue that we focused on here at the conference, another threat, but this one, this time an economic one, is the recent proliferation of taxation on aviation, which is disguised as green taxes or disguised as efforts to promote environmental mitigation, but which in reality, the funds neither go to development of aviation nor to development of environmental mitigation, and they are rather naked attempts at increasing government coffers. And so we wanted to remind governments that aviation is a key element in just about every country, is a key element of economic vitality in their countries, so that this is the kind of move that can truly backfire. So that something that seems like a quick fix to replenish government coffers will have the result down the road of reducing government coffers and perhaps leading to needing to do more drastic and self-defeating measures in the future. And with respect to environment, we've highlighted for our members the guidance and assistance we're able to give them in mitigating their greenhouse gases. I think many of you know that for airports, the issues of environment go beyond carbon reduction, although certainly carbon reduction is a major element. But we have to be concerned with other emissions, local air quality, as well as the issues of noise. And so we have asked our members to basically redouble their efforts on their environmental mitigations and have developed targets or developed guidance for them to set targets for that mitigation and for that reduction in their greenhouse gas emissions so that they can monitor their progress and so that airports can truly be a partner in the overall aviation goal that we have all subscribed to, all of the industry stakeholders have subscribed to, the overall goal of reducing carbon reductions in aviation.
Well, thank you, Angela. That's a very good introduction and certainly will lead to other questions. I do have David Grossman, who's right here and who I know has prepared some questions. So, David, based on what you've heard from Max and Angela, is there a particular question you'd like to launch the question and answer session with? I'm afraid you'll have to move down here because we don't have a speaker down there, if you don't mind. So David's on the way.
So in terms of the cargo screening type, you know, from a consumer perspective, I think consumers were wondering you know, why it's taken so long. I think you know, people thought that that was going to happen a lot sooner. Why has it taken so long, and how will you know when you're how will you measure, how will you know when you're successful?
Why has what taken so long? I mean, the actual screening
the actual,
of the physical
yeah,
elements of,
right.
of cargo?
To get us to a point where we're safe.
Well, I don't know that we're not at a point where we're safe. The approach has been, and we have Craig Bradbrook in the room, and so he can, I will ask him to jump in to be more specific. But the approach has been to secure the supply chain and to take a multi-layered approach. The approach of waiting for something to get to the airport and having the airport as the first and last line of defense is not a good idea. The whole point of multi-layers is you do not depend on one element, and if that element fails, all is lost. And I think you've actually seen in this particular case that the intelligence piece, which is, you know, which is a very important component of security and one that all security experts will tell you is a crucial point. And in this particular case, or these particular cases, it really has been the intelligence that has been a key item in uncovering and mitigating the threat. Anything you want to add to that, Craig?
I think it's pertinent to remember that the vast majority of freight that is shipped as air cargo is from very reputable sources that establish the integrity of those shipments at the source, and therefore the need to treat that cargo in the same way that you treat cargo that is presented by unknown shippers with no business relationship with a forwarding company. You know, I think that much smaller category obviously deserves a more risk-based approach with a higher level of scrutiny on those shippers.
I think you also need to take account of that while screening of passengers itself is a huge task, the screening of global cargo is much, much larger, affecting the whole flow of international commerce and very complex interrelationships. When a passenger leaves the aircraft, they may well return to their place of residence or origin. A piece of cargo is only starting, in many cases, its journey once it leaves the aircraft into a much more complex logistics chain. So that a risk-based approach, as Craig mentioned, and I think has been already broadly accepted by a key spokesman over recent days as fundamental for dealing with air cargo is really the only common sense based approach. You cannot treat highly complex cargo flows the way you treat human individuals. In many cases, cargo shipments are made up of several diverse components. In other cases, you are dealing with packaging which is dense or otherwise. To have a one-size-fits-all approach, which we tend to have in respect of passenger transportation and which we are concerned about, that there is a one-size-fits-all approach to some extent, would be quite impossible in cargo.
What do you mean by risk-based approach to cargo?
Well, this particular series of serious threats have been uncovered by intelligence in Saudi Arabia, I understand, and also by work of the intelligence agencies in Britain and the United States. We all know that the actual risk on a day-to-day basis from terrorism is infinitesimal, but highly dangerous and highly unstable. Now, as I said, if you check every piece of cargo every day, the size of that task, the cost of that task, and the risk of finding an explosive in that task would be enormous. So you really have to apply, you have to put your efforts as to where intelligence is telling you the risks are. And obviously, you've already seen some focus on particular locations.
Is it possible, though, to specifically screen all cargo that goes in an aircraft?
Well, I think that the jury is still out on that. But as I say, is there a need to screen all cargo? I mean, for example, we're in Bermuda here today. I suspect the risk of a terrorist threat on cargo leaving Bermuda today is probably infinitesimal if you take a risk-based approach and intelligence. So to simply regulate to say that every piece of cargo that moves in the air transportation chain must be treated exactly the same way, I think, is massive overkill.
Well, I think I think that, you know, the screening, the physical act of screening or appearing to screen, you know, gives a great deal of comfort, kind of in a public relations sense. But in a true security sense, you know, as Max is saying, you know, the idea of actually trying to screen every item, you know, every pencil, winds up taking the resources that could be better used, you know, for intelligence, for screening where there is a risk, you know, for more heightened technology and research into the kinds of screening protocols we need for the true risk. Just to kind of make people feel that something's being done, is not from a policy standpoint, is really not in the public interest.
Could I jump in here to say we have some people online and give an opportunity perhaps to anyone who has dialed into the call, if you have a further add-on question to security, or if not, on another topic. We'll ask our line moderator to help us with that.
Thank you. For telephone participants, if you would like to ask a question, please lift your handset if on a speakerphone before making a choice. You may press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question, and if at any time you wish to cancel your question, you may press the pound key. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register, and we thank you for your patience. Once again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. The first question will be from James Ott at Aviation Week. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Jim Ott from Aviation Week. On securing the supply chain, I wondered, it sounds like you're putting out a call for an international meeting, a kind of a get-together of governments and so on. Have you made any contact with the KO about doing this? And the reason I ask is I was speaking with Brandon Freed of the Air Forwarders Association just yesterday, and he said pretty much the same thing that you're saying, that we have to secure the supply chain and we have to bring all of the stakeholders together. What chances are there of something happening rather soon on this quest?
Jim, this is Craig Bradbrook with ACI. To reply to your question, the ICAO AFSEC panel of security experts and the ICAO facilitation panel of facilitation experts have formed a joint secretariat study group on supply chain security, and that has already started its work. Also, the latest amendment to Annex 17 captures and endorses the concept of the secure supply chain. And so this work is going to proceed. We're focusing now on the actual protocols that need to be agreed and put in place to facilitate and reciprocal recognition agreements that will be needed for the entities in the supply chain for it to work effectively.
I see.
We understand there may actually be a meeting later this year.
This year? And that would be at ICAO in Montreal? A second question. One of the failures that appears at the TSA has been to develop a detection machine that will be able to discriminate with cargo in pallets and in containers. How does ACI feel about development of that? If anything, for a last line of defense, that kind of technology. Is there any support for that? I did notice that in one of the resolutions that you were looking for more R&D. Is this what you're looking for? Is something that would be a detection system that would be capable of determining explosive in a...
Well, certainly that would be, more technology that can quickly, effectively, that can quickly and effectively detect threats is certainly a good thing. That's certainly positive, and that's why we did call for more research and development. I mean, technology is certainly one piece of the arsenal in securing the supply chain, and we applaud those efforts.
I see. Okay. One other question related to the European Commission's resolution. It looks like that you're saying that we're going to have to live with this for a while. Is that the way you see it at this stage? And why is that?
I'm sorry.
The reality is there is no global technically based system in place at the moment to screen all aviation cargo. That is the reality. And I think what the head of the TSA, the head of IATA, and ourselves are saying is that, yes, there has to be increased emphasis on cargo security. Yes, we have to seek to have the supply chain become more disciplined, more capable of being tested throughout the chain. But it's going to take some little time, and if we're going to avoid overreaction, because the cost of actually dealing with air cargo the way we deal with individual passengers would be both enormous and probably not sustainable. So a different approach is going to have to be applied. This is not just applying what we do to human beings to every piece of air cargo that moves. I cannot imagine that we would get to that outcome. What we do need, as Craig said, is the nations of the world and the experts to get together on how we make the logistics of the supply chain safe.
I see. I wasn't clear, Max. I'm really talking about the EC resolution, regarding liquids and gels. And it looks like...
Oh, liquids and gels.
Yes, I'm sorry. I wasn't very clear.
I apologize. We have a resolution on liquids and gels, and I'll ask Angela to speak to that.
Right.
What we've asked is we recognize the good intentions of what the EC is enacting,
right,
to try to improve the convenience of travelers.
Right.
But this is one of those conditions where good intentions lead to very bad outcomes.
Right.
And our concern is twofold. One, just from a facilitation point of view, what starts as convenience can lead to the kind of confusion that occurred when the liquids and gels restrictions went into effect the first time. It was very unclear as to what the rules at any particular airport were. People were getting their items confiscated. I mean, even the security operators were inconsistent and not always understanding what the rules were. And certainly at the point of origin, at the point of sale, quite often the retail clerks did not know what the rules were and poorly advised the
mm-hmm.
customer. So that's one point of view. And that's the facilitation side. On the security side, one is still concerned about a threat. And so the ability to screen, again, on a risk-based approach, the ability to screen, as far as I know, has not really been properly tested in an airport environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we all know, what can happen in a laboratory is not the same when you put equipment or a process in place when you have hundreds or thousands of people going through or items going through. You have maintenance issues, you have climate issues, and it takes time to make those tests and make sure that it's effective. And then thirdly is just the financial question of airports or governments having to actually procure, install, and maintain these machines, and particularly when this is at a first generation. These are probably not the machines that are going to be needed later because development does continue, and there's going to be a full lifting of restrictions at some point. And so they're talking about spending millions of euros on investment that will probably not last more than a year, two, or three. So they're not even going to be able to amortize it properly for an outcome that's not that much better than where we are today.
Mm. Well, thank you very much.
Jim,
thanks for answering.
Thank you. Maybe we could come back. I know David seems to have a question here, and then we'll go back online. We're going to try to extend by a few minutes the length of our session. I hope we won't get cut off. We had reserved a time. But let's go a little quickly. David, what might you have as a question here?
A related question, more general question about security. It seems one of the issues that I've heard over and over again is that the length of time that it takes for new devices, new detection systems, and so forth to get through certification, and that, you know, that we could be doing a lot better if we had more of those new machines or whatever, you know, through the process. It seems to get held up in TSA doing that. I didn't see anything specifically in the resolutions addressing that type of issue. Is that an issue that ACI is concerned about, and is it something that we're thinking about in terms of trying to get quicker?
Yeah, I'm going to let Craig answer the question from a technical point of view, but I can just tell you, from experience that, you know, sometimes we want them to take longer, because sometimes we want them to spend a lot more time testing the machines in an operational setting for the reasons I just outlined. You know, it's not just what happens in the laboratory. You know, they focus quite properly on the extent to which the machine can actually detect the threat, the extent of false alarms, and what that balance is. And then our concern is a rush to put it in an operational environment as though we now know what the throughput is. Throughput in a laboratory is not necessarily the throughput in an operational setting.
And also remember that our objective is ultimately to get to a much more nuanced, risk-based regime for both people and for cargo. Relying on machines instead to be a panacea so that everybody is just treated in exactly the same way is a very, I think, expensive, time-consuming, and probably not a terribly satisfactory outcome. So I think whilst machines are an essential component of the solution to the problem, thinking that that machines will be a panacea and take away the need for fundamental risk-based analysis of where threats are, I think is dangerous. So we need to balance the development of new machines to make sure they're effective and to see them as a part of the solution to the problem, not as the solution to the problem.
Craig, did you have anything to add to that?
I think our concern has been that there hasn't been common test protocols. So one country may certify a piece of equipment, but another country may not recognize that certification, and that causes problems operationally. There's a lot of work that's been done within ICAO on that, and we are expecting a common test protocol for screening equipment to come out very shortly. This will be, I think, a significant breakthrough, and it will shorten the time then that devices, you know, have to come to market, if you like, because they won't have to be certified in every single national laboratory, but, you know, other states can recognize those certifications.
Excellent. I think we need to go back to Joe and let him give the dial-in folks a chance to ask some more questions. Can I turn that back to you, Joe?
Certainly. As a reminder, if at any time telephone participants would like to ask a question, they may press star 1 on their telephone keypad. And there are no questions on the telephone lines.
Okay, then we'll come back to Joe Bates, who's here in the room with us and who I know has some questions here.
We've got a couple of economic questions for you. I mean, Andrew mentioned yesterday about airports not being embarrassed about profitability. Why did you say that?
Well, I think we've allowed ourselves to get painted in a corner at times by others. as though making a profit was somehow evil, and as though it were on the backs of other industry partners, particularly the airlines, which it's not. When airports do make a profit, it's based on their non-aeronautical revenue. The contribution to total revenue of airlines is actually very small in comparison to the cost of what the airport is providing to the airline. And it's subsidized on a global basis, subsidized by some $5 billion U.S. dollars a year. And the issue of profit, so-called profitability, is that airports have to invest in facilities and make major maintenance investments. And how do they do that? If they can't, if they don't get a return on capital, then you don't have anything to make those investments with. So that was really the point. And let us not get so caught up in the attention given to an annual loss by airlines, that gets talked about, and then get pointed at, but you made money, so obviously you're an evil partner. The point is that airports have to invest over the long term. A downturn this year is, an upturn in 2 years, but airports cannot, in a short period of time, develop the facilities to accommodate that upturn.
But also, it's the argument has become oversimplified. Airports, there's nobody happier to see airlines making profits than airport operators. Mm-hmm. By very nature, the relationship between airports and airlines is symbiotic. If airlines are doing well, that means they're carrying more passengers. If they're carrying more passengers, airports will do well. So it isn't a contest, an either or. It's a question of how each of the industry, parts of the industry, manage their resources. They are fundamentally different in many cases. We have huge fixed assets of capital which have to be amortized over many years. We don't have the airlines have somewhat different problems. The second capacity is, and it's not recognized generally, that when passenger numbers go down, this is Angela's point, airports' revenues go down as well. They don't just sit there with a stable revenue base. Firstly, most airports in most countries now have commercial arrangements with airlines which relate to the number of passengers they carry. The revenue goes up or down with numbers of passengers. In some big countries, that's not the case. And certainly, for most of us, it is. The second factor is, as Angela says, about 50% of our revenue comes from sources other than the airlines themselves. It comes from their passengers. So if airline passengers are not coming through airport terminals, we suffer. It is a symbiotic relationship, but they are different relationships, and they can't lead to exactly the same outcomes.
Mm. But have airport revenues, have they held up over the last couple of years? Because the airlines are saying they're losing money all the time.
Well, if an airline's losing money all the time, it goes out of business. And we know that a number of new airlines go up who are in business. And I mean, if you in the media for the last couple of days, you've seen where profitability has substantially returned. And the most profitable airline, I suppose, at the moment was a low-cost carrier, Ryanair, which announced its results recently. But also, legacy carriers announced substantial improvements in their profitability. So you have to look at it case by case. There is no general outcome. But the reality is, if you lose money all the time, you probably should go out of business.
But neither one should be should be profitable at the expense of the other. I mean, because as Max says, it's a symbiotic relationship, and so we both need to survive for the other to survive.
And that's what's happening.
For capital development projects, there was some figure, I think, that takes around billions have been spent. Have projects been deferred or put off? Have they been affected by the event, the economic downturn of the last couple of years?
It has varied over by region and as well as by airport. There was not that much deferral. Most of the deferrals, if they did occur, were for 1 or 2 years. And in some regions, there was essentially no deferral at all. Even through this economic downturn, in some regions or in some specific countries, there continued to be growth. The growth might have been less than it would have been had there not been an economic downturn, but there was still growth. And in some regions, the infrastructure, the capacity, it started with capacity at the beginning of the crisis, was such that they still needed to build to accommodate even a lower amount of growth. We saw that, for example, in China and India and Brazil.
Well, thank you very much. I hate to interrupt this because this is a good discussion we've got going here. I think we could use twice as much time, but we had planned for a short briefing. Certainly, all of you who are online and the two of you who are here with me, if you have further questions, you can send them to me, as my email message indicated. We will be putting together some questions and answers for our website, putting those together probably by next week. And so your input, your further questions will be quite welcome. And I'm always happy to help any journalist to arrange interviews insofar as it's possible, either with ACI people or with some of our board members. So thank you very much for dialing in. To those of you who have been our silent partners, thank you to the moderator, Joe, on the other end for helping us to get this all organized. And we look forward to hearing from you again shortly. And thanks to Angela and Max very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. The conference call has concluded. You may disconnect your telephone lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.